racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Well, it sounds unbelievable, but the first major of the season is complete, and what an amazing win it was by 23-year-old Colin Morikawa. Hi, I'm Bob Bupka. Very proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., or you might know him as STL Golf Geek. We welcome you all back into the grill room. Golf is everywhere, Jay. We're itching for some high-class golf competition, and wow, what a finish it was at the 102nd PGA Championship. In fact, it had a little bit of everything.
Yeah, Bob, the quest for the Wanamaker Cup at Harding Park was fantastic. I thought the golf course played fantastic. I thought Kerry Haig, who sets up the golf course along with his staff, did an amazing job. You had a lot of different players. You had a lot of different things going on. You had a lot of guys in the mix. But yet, one of the youngest in the field, and a kid now that has the same number of missed cuts on the PGA Tour as he does major championships, won. Colin Morikawa put the hammer down and won the championship with an incredible shot. The most amazing thing is not his golf swing or his putting stroke. It's the way he carries himself at such a young age, and that's what we've talked about a lot, Bob. These young players, and it should not be a surprise to anybody that this guy won this golf tournament. You know, back in the day, if you had a young player up against veterans that had major championships like Koepka, like DJ, like a young and up-and-coming player like DeChambeau, everybody's talking about, yeah, you could have been surprised that a 23-year-old kid would win the golf tournament. But Morikawa has proven to us how good he is, and boy, he was great on Sunday. He was great all week.
Yeah, he really was, and you and I may have a little fork in the road. Let me run it up your flagpole and get your reaction. I actually felt that Harding Park on Sunday, the setup was way too easy, the easiest of the 4 days. And I suspect it's the trickle-down effect from what's been happening at the Masters, where on Sunday they make it so that, you know, almost every hole's a birdie hole. And, you know, and I admire Kerry Haig as much as anybody. But, golly, it just seemed set up too easy on Sunday for me. Now, am I wrong in that thinking? Or help me out here, Jay.
No, you're not wrong, Bob. I did get a sense, and especially when you watch some early rounds, and thank goodness I had him on my DraftKings, Ryan Armour went out and shot 64. Early, and we saw some good early scores, and that gave guys the idea that there were numbers out there. I think the key here, Bob, was the way the golf course played. You know, it gave you big opportunities early. We saw DeChambeau take advantage of that right off the bat, being 3 under through 4 or 5. Then that stretch at 8 and 9 was very difficult. Then they give you a little cush on 10 with a par 5, but then it jumps back and bites you on 12, 13, 14. But then 16 and 7, obviously 16, and 17, a short par 3 with an iron, and then 18, you know, it's kind of hit or miss. I don't disagree with you. I kind of understand. It appeared that the golf course may have played the easiest the last day. I don't know if that was the conditions or if they were expecting maybe some more wind. But I understand that. I mean, I think we've talked about it before, you and I, that our rendition of major championships that we kind of cut our teeth on is a lot different maybe than what we see now. All week long, they talked leading up to the tournament. They talked about how the rough was thick. And yeah, it was thick. But, you know, when Bob and I were watching majors, instead of being 105 yards from the hole, these guys were 155 or 165. I think that's the difference that we see sometimes now. Yeah, there was significant rough, and guys had to, you know, maneuver their way out of it. But from 105 yards, it's a lot different.
You know, that's an excellent point you bring up, Jay, and I hadn't thought of that. And let me bring up that in our predictions category, you took two players. You took Ryan Palmer and John Rahm, and both those guys did really, really well. I took Brooks Koepka and Kevin Kisner.
And both of those guys did well.
Yeah, but Kisner, you know, certainly opened up well and kind of struggled there towards the end. But when you look at John Rahm, I look at him and I say, you know, definitely a major in his future. He's just got too much going for him. And I know we disagree a little bit on Bryson DeChambeau, but boy, what I'm seeing is it's like he's going to win a major. He may even win it by accident. I mean, golly, when he's on target, it's crazy. I mean, let me play his drives, and I can go back in the competition.
Yeah, there's no doubt that we're seeing the potential of the way the sport is played or the game is played being different. And DeChambeau is the poster child for that. There's no doubt. I mean, when he's right, when he can hit it with his power and find fairways, or, you know, you think about it, you go back to 16, DeChambeau almost hit as good a shot as Morikawa did on 16. His ball didn't go in the bunker. It stayed on the right in the first cut, only about 15 feet for eagle, but it was certainly more awkward than Morikawa's. And if you wonder if he would have made eagle there, how that would have propelled him and how it would have changed things, but it's golf. They got to be careful, and I look forward to Wingfoot and how Wingfoot is set up. And when I say they got to be careful, I mean the governing bodies. You know, at some point, you can't let it get out of hand, and it appears that, you know, at some tournament in the near future, all of a sudden it's going to come together, and Bryson DeChambeau may whack him and win by 5 or 6 at one of these majors.
Yeah, he's mind-boggling. I mean,
yep.
I would be nervous, to tell you the truth. Once we get back to galleries, I would be nervous standing around the tee when he's taking his practice swings. He's swinging so hard that I'd be fearful that head's going to come flying off and really hurt somebody. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, my point of reference, I went back and pulled up some footage of long driving contests, okay?
Yep.
Those guys don't swing nearly as hard as Bryson DeChambeau does. I mean, it's absolutely crazy what he does, and yet he gets such a high percentage of accuracy that it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's almost, I thought about it on Sunday, Bob. It's almost like, you remember back in the day, Evan Big Cat Williams or Skip Dunaway or Andy Franks, these guys that used to be able to move it out there, you know, in the 320 category at the long drive championships, and everybody'd go, whoa. Well, now you got a guy moving it out there 350, 355, and hitting fairways who can putt, chip, and has got a mind that is always thinking and always working. It's a unique time, and I also like a little bit of the fact that kind of a golfer, Colin Morikawa, who moves the ball right and left, and doesn't, I mean, he hits it a long way, but is not one of the top 20 drivers of the in terms of distance off the tee. So every time we start to think that the shift has happened and it's over, and if you're not a bomber and you can't hit it 350, you're done, you get the presence of a Morikawa or a Justin Thomas or a JT Poston or somebody that kind of breaks that norm. But it's a unique time in the game, and the game's benefiting. Bob, the ratings were through the roof, partly because of the prime time, partly because, you know, of the virus, partly because there isn't as much necessarily going on or in the forefront. So our game saw a new champion, a young star, get it done, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch moving forward, still with two majors and the playoffs to go.
You know, it was a lot of fun when they mentioned the name JT Poston. He's the last guy on the PGA Tour to win a tour event without making a bogey.
And was that, what tournament was that? Was that the Wyndham?
Yeah, I believe it was. Good call there.
I think it was.
I mean, winning a PGA Tour event is one thing, playing 72 holes without making a bogey, it doesn't seem real. I remember many a day playing 72 holes and never made a par. So, you know.
I mean, Bob, there was a time where we had become accustomed to United States Opens turning in over par scores and the PGA being anywhere from, you know, even par to 6 to 8 under. You know, Kerry Haig, it appears, is very content with a 9 to 12 under type of winner when the tournament is going to start. And that's kind of where the PGA has fallen. So, you know, it certainly provided great theater, and it provided great theater without anybody yelling, "Be the ball."
that's for sure. And a unique thing that Kerry does, unlike any of the other majors, he will never tell the players what speed the greens are running at. His stock answer, no matter how many different ways you ask him, how fast are they today? And Kerry will just look at you with that little sly smile of his, and he'll say, championship speed, championship speed. So that's the way he does it, and he does it well. And speaking of somebody doing it well, nobody out of the field did it any better than our newest champion. Let's hear what he had to say, Colin Morikawa, on that victory.
It was going to take a very, very good round today. And I knew with the leaderboard, the way it was looking, and everyone out there, you just had to play well. You know, it's you either win or you lose. And made the putt on one and, you know, went full steam ahead there. Yeah, no, I mean, this is the first time where I've been around a leaderboard that crowded. So many guys, you know, out there trying to make birdies. We're all tied for the lead, whatever it is, one back, especially in the closing holes out here. You know, they're not easy. We got a little fortunate with some pin locations today coming down the stretch. You know, I feel very comfortable in this spot. And when I woke up today, I was like, you know, this is meant to be. This is where I feel very comfortable. This is where I want to be. And I'm not scared from it. I think if I was scared from it, the last few holes would have been a little different. But you want to be in this position. And for me, you know, it doesn't stop here. This is where I want to be. And, you know, I love it.
Well, his parents had a pretty good omen, Jay. Believe it or not, on Friday morning, they got up and they were sitting out in their backyard having a cup of coffee. And all of a sudden, the balloon came floating down. And it was strange, just out of nowhere. And they picked it up and looked at it and had a big number one on the balloon. They didn't dare say anything to their son. They didn't want to jinx him. But they told him later on, he was quite surprised about that. So I'm sure that balloon had nothing to do with it. But did you note in his comments, Jay, he specifically said, we were lucky we had some ideal hole locations on that backside, which was precisely what I was alluding to.
Yeah, you were a little surprised that the opportunities were as easy as they may have appeared. The guys still have to hit the shots, as Morikawa did on the 16th. But yeah, I you know, again, you know, you expect things maybe to be a little bit more testing at a major championship. I'll tell you the other thing. When he passed the test a couple of weeks ago at the Workday, when he beat Justin Thomas, you know, in the playoff, and had to, you know, after Justin made that 54 footer in the playoff, after it looked like Justin had given the golf tournament away, and Morikawa puts it on top of him in the playoff hole to tie him. I mean, it just showed the moxie. And he doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. I mean, his blood pressure never seems to change. This was only his second major, I believe. I mean, I believe he'd only played in the U.S. Open last year when he tied for 35th. I mean, second major. Big-time stuff.
Certainly big-time stuff. It was funny because he said he stayed in college, Cal Berkeley, only about 20 miles away from Harding Park. He wanted to get his degree in business administration, said he wants to manage his business affairs himself. I mean, man, that might have changed on Sunday night. The bad news coming out of it, the state of California, well, the winning purse, $1.9 million, and they clipped a cool $1 million out of that purse for taxes in California. So I don't think Morikawa is going to be hoping they play too many more majors in California.
But he'll take it. Don't worry. He'll take it.
Give him a little cushion. Give him a
fourth player since now. Yeah, the cushion. He understands now what a JT cushion is because he set himself up to possibly get that with the playoffs and the FedEx Cup. He's the fourth player since 1934 to win his second start or fewer in a major. I mean, that's just, you know, rarefied air. The fifth player since 1955 to win the PGA in his first start. Was Daly the last? I'm not sure. Maybe Beamer. I don't know. And this is his third win in 29 starts. That's not Tiger-like, but it's pretty damn close. It's pretty strong. You know, we got a new star to pay attention to. He's also made more eagles. You know, the eagle was the key. The eagle put the hammer down and changed the golf tournament at 16. He's made more eagles on the PGA Tour this year than any other player. That's why he was on my DraftKings team. Bob, he was on 28% of the DraftKings teams. I think he was the highest used player over the weekend for DraftKings teams.
So you're just trying to rub it in my face that I didn't pick him. I know what you're up to there, Mr. Randall.
Hey, he wasn't my pick. You get six guys. You get six guys with the DraftKings, and luckily, he was one of mine, and luckily all six of mine made the cut. So, you know, I'll take my $25 to win 63. If I could do that every week, if I live long enough, I'll be all right.
That's for sure. But let me run one more thing by you. You know, so much noise was being made about, you know, that eagle on 16 and the shot that he hit. But I'll take you back to the very first green. He's playing in a major. You know, pressure's on. He's got a 22-foot putt for par on the first hole. Now, you certainly don't want to start out a fourth and final round of a major with a bogey, and he drains that 22-footer, obviously because of the glamour of the eagle on 16. That putt on one doesn't get much mention, but I would rate them almost equally as important.
Well, we talked about how important the first five or six holes to get yourself a couple of under, to get a little breather before you head to some of the meat of the golf course. And there is an effect with what you do on the first hole. I mean, a lot of these guys, and Morikawa probably is one of them, that just brushes it off. But it still changes the way you would approach the second hole by not, if you wouldn't have made the first putt, made that putt on number one. You know, I think you could probably pick a lot of things over the 4 days. But the fact that he hit the shot when he hit it, with the situation, with the tournament the way it was, and let's be honest, you were kind of looking for a signature move. You were looking for a tway hole out from a bunker, like in 86 at the PGA Championship. You had all these guys in the mix. Who's going to take it? Is Casey going to get his first? Is Koepka going to respond? Is DJ going to get a major that maybe he didn't necessarily go ahead and win, but got, you know, had the low score? It was very interesting the way he took control with one shot. But you're right, Bob. I'm sure there were a lot of moments and a lot of big putts for him.
Yeah, hats off. You mentioned his name, Paul Casey. He's played in over 60 majors, yet to win one. He's in that group with Colin Montgomery and Luke Donald and
Lee Westwood.
And Lee Westwood. I mean, all players that were number one in the world and have yet to win a major seems pretty amazing.
Yeah, Bob, 64 major championships in the modern era of golf. Nobody has played in more majors and never won a golf tournament. Boy, it looked like this was going to be Casey's. Let's hear from the Englishman who was so close.
Look, I played phenomenal golf, and there's nothing I would change. Very, very happy with how I played. Great attitude. Stayed very calm and stayed in the present. Wasn't enough. I mean, the glorious shots Collins hit coming down on holes like 16 to make eagle. I mean, you just have to tip your cap. When he popped up on tour not that long ago, I mean, those guys who were paying attention like myself knew that this was something special, and he's proved it today. Well, he's already sort of proved it, but he's really stamped his authority of how good he is today. But I'm very, very happy with everything. It's, you know, kind of got my mojo back now.
Pretty nice words by Paul Casey there, acknowledging that he was satisfied that he made a good run, also acknowledging potential overall greatness of Morikawa, said he had his eyes on him ever since he showed up on the scene. So pretty amazing stuff.
I think as you and I got to talk about here on the program, kind of this trio, if you will, of Hovland, Matthew Wolf, and Morikawa, who may end up being the best. And it seemed like a lot of the international guys that cover the game were just head over heels in love with Hovland. But boy, the more time goes on, and that consistency and the fact of only one missed cut and one major and three wins in 29 events, Paul Casey may have been dead on when he kind of got the feeling that this guy was the real deal. No doubt about it.
And he's going to get some tussles along the way with Matt Wolf, only 21 years old, played lights out. Great to see Jason Day playing well again, Jay. Really one of the good guys out there, ties for fourth, and showed some of that magnificent skill that he possesses.
Love Jason Day. Janice Self, our executive producer, met him the first time, I believe, in the Quad Cities. We got to interview him, like his first interview. He was unbelievable. Such a class act. A couple of months later, out of nowhere, he walked into our broadcast position and said hello to everybody and knew our names. Just a good guy. And you wondered, you know, over the course of 4 days, could he put it together? He did, obviously, a couple of weeks ago at Memorial and played well on his home golf course. I thought Jason Day might win the golf tournament as things were progressing because he looked that good. DeChambeau, who we talked about, a tie for fourth. Tony Finau, hey, all I do is just top 10 and make a bunch of money. I got to find my way to the winner's circle. And then the always solid Justin Rose finishing in the top 10 at ninth. And a good tournament for young Cameron Champ. Nice to see him play well in a major championship in his home state of California. He finished 8 under.
Yeah, and John Rahm, your horse that you picked, tied for 13th at -7. Kisner, my good buddy, a top 20 finish. So good work by the kids. One quick thing, Jay, before we move on. Your thoughts on Tony Finau. It seems now that, you know, Sundays are becoming a major problem for him. And boy, if there's anything you don't want to develop, if you're a pro golfer, is having trouble on Sunday.
You don't want Sunday to be your bugaboo. I mean, he'll be all right. I mean, I think he plays too good a golf. The other thing, I mean, there's just so many good players. You know, that's why Paul Casey can say, damn, I played great golf. I shot 11 under par at the PGA Championship. I didn't really make any mistakes that were just, you know, glaring. I got beat. And it seems like Finau gets beat quite a bit. He's got to find a way to get the lowest score in the hole. Brooks Koepka, who got, you know, a little I shouldn't say mouthy because he don't say much anyway. But when he compared himself to DJ on Saturday and said, I got four, he's got one, I think I'll be all right. That was a little surprising. I don't know that Koepka meant anything by it, but it fueled some people to talk about it. And then he did not have a good final day with a bad start off the bat.
No, he did not have a good day. And this is what he had to say after his round.
It's my first bad round in a while in a major. And, you know, I was just there to cheer Paul on. That was it. You just try to help him get in the house and see how well he could finish because I'd put myself out of it already. But you know, hey, it wasn't meant to be. Three in a row, you're not really supposed to do two in a row from looking at history, but it's all right. Got two more the rest of the season, and we'll figure it out from there.
Boy, he's got a lot of confidence, Jay.
I mean, you know, yeah, he does, but if he could ever smile for somebody, it'd be nice. I mean, you know, take it a little bit lighter. Yeah, I got two more majors left, you know. I mean, we know you're a badass. We know you're a tough guy. We know you're a, you know, look like a linebacker. But you didn't get it the day after running your mouth. So maybe don't run your mouth at Wingfoot and just go play.
What about Rory McIlroy? Tied for 33rd. The mystery grows deeper surrounding Rory McIlroy.
Rory didn't get off to a very good start. He didn't build much momentum. He wasn't able to put strings of holes together to finish off rounds. A little surprised. I don't know that it should be that surprising based on the way he's been playing, but you had a sense with everybody kind of doing what they were doing with Koepka and DJ and Rahm in the mix going into the final day that we were left without Rory. We were also left without Tiger, who looked so focused early in the week and looked very solid putting in the first couple of rounds. And then the putter kind of failed him in round three. It wasn't the worst ball striking week for TW, but he'd only played in one golf tournament in a long time. And it was nice to hear him say, even though he wouldn't commit to it directly after the question, he kind of let it be known he plans on playing at the Northern Trust, the first playoff event. So Tiger hopefully will be back next week. Jordan Spieth and Phil Mickelson, two guys still with an opportunity to get career major championships. Spieth there at the PGA, Phil at, I'll say it, Wingfoot, where he should have gotten his U.S. Open. They just make the cut and both finish plus four. So a pretty good wrap on what was the first major of the year and a wonderful major at fantastic Harding Park. Speaking of good golf courses and public golf courses, let's let you hear a little bit more about where I hang my hat, Gateway National, and then we'll preview the Wyndham Championship, the final regular season event on the schedule to get into the top 125. Enjoy golf as it was meant to be played at Gateway National Golf Links, a stunning links-style course in the St. Louis area. After all, it is the number one public golf course in St. Louis, and it's the only one with bent grass fairways. Only public course in the region with bent grass fairways. Gateway National offers golfers the rare opportunity to return to the rich traditions of the game with rolling links in the heart of the country. Gentle mounds and plenty of tall grasses. Spacious fairways, and of course, when you play number three, well, you just aim for the Gateway Arch. That's right, the iconic St. Louis Arch is right there. Gateway National Golf Links, the number one public golf course in St. Louis and the only one with bent grass, with a friendly staff to make your day a memorable one, to make your tee time the best way and the best rates are online at gatewaynational.com. An added perk, if you live here in the St. Louis area, you purchase the season pass. Walters Golf Management manages eight other properties and you'll get playing privileges at those golf courses. Gateway National, always in great shape. And remember that website, gatewaynational.com. That's where you'll find the best rates, gatewaynational.com. Welcome back to In the Grill Room, Bob and Jay. You can find me on Twitter at STL Golf Geek. You can find Bob Bupka, who worked into the early morning hours talking to the folks over the pond in Europe and beyond. You can find Bob on Twitter at Bob Bupka VOG. That VOG appropriately stands for the voice of golf. The big deal this week, it's all about money and position because, Bob, it's the top 10 share for the finish of the year. $10 million up at stake for the Wyndham Rewards, where you stand at the end of the playoff qualifier. Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Webb Simpson, Bryson DeChambeau, Sung J.M., Pat Reed, Daniel Berger, Rory, Brendan Todd, John Rahm, are all looking for some of that bonus. And this is to get you in the top 125. So those guys that aren't in, it's a huge week.
Yeah, it's I don't know, Jay. When I think about the $10 million pool, and as you accurately said, this week's all about the money, I have this vision that we're on a cruise ship and they just put out this magnificent buffet and I'm walking around to the tables asking anybody if they want a free sandwich. I mean,
it's tough to
understand.
It's money smothered in money is what it is. It's, you know, I mean, they get this money and they get this sponsorship and they get the increased TV revenue, and it's only going to continue to increase because the ratings are going up. People are playing more golf. Younger people are getting into the game. You know, the COVID thing stinks. It's awful. It's changed all of our lives. It's changed the way we think. It's changed the way we approach people. But I got to tell you, it's been a boom for the game of golf. And, you know, it's almost they'd be better off taking this money. Honestly, they should have said, you know what we're going to do with the 10 million rewards? We're going to reward, you know, people out there that need it. I don't know. It's like you said, it was like when they first started giving the $1 million tournament at Vegas or 100,000 to a winner. I mean, yeah, that was significant. We all kind of looked around and went, wow, this is just kind of okay. Well, I wonder if any of those guys will play to try and improve their position. A lot of the top guys in that list are not playing. I noticed Patrick Reed is playing. He wants to get some money.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just leaves a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. And along those lines, because we definitely had a crowded menu today, but I know our executive producer, Jen, herself, probably get upset with me, but I'm going to slip this in anyway. Jay, I'm almost flabbergasted at the extent that the PGA Tour is embracing gambling on their sport.
Yesterday, Bob, there was a message left at the golf course at Gateway from DraftKings, and I called the gentleman back. I'm not going to say his name, but he is one of their directors of marketing. And DraftKings has just created a partnership in St. Louis and gotten the gambling license. And when I say the gambling license, I mean for sports gambling via a casino down on the river here in St. Louis. DraftKings has gotten AKA the sports book. This guy that I spoke to, Bob, he got to the final table in 2019 at the World Series of Poker. He had worked for Poker Stars before, and when the whole thing kind of went bad for Poker Stars, lined up with DraftKings, and we had a very interesting discussion. He's looking to get some promotion for the new betting app that they're doing in Southern Illinois, and, you know, maybe buy some rounds of golf at Gateway to give away to the top players and blah, blah, blah. But then we got into this discussion. I said, I got to tell you, as somebody who, in a way, worked for the PGA Tour for a couple of years, which I know you did as well, it's an extremely conservative organization. And I said, for a lot of us to see the jump in the fray into the sports betting world by the PGA Tour, it's amazing for us. And he said, it surprised a lot of us. He said, you know, it's not directly them saying betting. As Janice has pointed out, it's a lot about the information and the statistics. And he said, being able to use video of guys and not necessarily saying that Tiger Woods endorses DraftKings, but because his presence is being shown in video about DraftKings because they have the right to do so by their relationship with the PGA Tour, it's fascinating. And I said to him, I said, do you think there'll be a time where, like on Sunday, when Morikawa gets to the 16th hole, that they're going to flash up his odds to win and you're going to just be able to go to your phone at that moment and do it? And he said, Jay, you can do it now. I mean, you're right. As two guys that have never denied that we have found our way to a table or a Ladbrokes over the pond, or, you know, if it's slow on a Friday night, pitch a couple of pennies against the wall. It really is unbelievable. It almost seems more like the PGA Tour than any other sports organization is embracing this. Now, again, You can talk about, well, are they really embracing it? Are they just giving the likeness to show of their players and statistics? No, they're embracing it. They're getting the dough.
Let me just make one point, and we're going to have to shut it down, Jay. But biggest single source of revenue 10 years from now for the PGA Tour is not going to be the money they make from TV. It is going to be the money they make from people buying ShotLink statistics. They'll be for sale. You can buy a little package. You can buy a big package. And you get all the information before you go make your bets. And I guess Janice said it best when I was, anytime we talk about the PGA Tour and gambling,
yep.
She says, it's all about the money, honey. And that's the only time she calls me honey, so I don't mind her saying it.
Well, she's dead on. And you know, conservative or not, it's about the money. I mean, and we know how strong their pension program is. I mean, they had to create a goofy thing that Bob mentioned earlier, the Wyndham Rewards $10 million pool. You think anybody out there is going, man, I wonder who's going to win the Wyndham Rewards pool this week? I mean, seriously, you think the guys in a, when they pass each other in the locker room, you think you think Morikawa's going to overtake JT for the bonus this week? I mean, it's just goofiness. And that's what happens when the money gets so astronomical, is you got to create something called the Wyndham Rewards. So the health of the tour, as it relates to the players and as it relates to the financial situation, may be as strong as we've ever seen it. And that's on the downturn of one of the three biggest stars that's ever played the game. So the future looks bright for the PGA Tour. The future also looks bright for a young high school senior, 17-year-old Californian Rose Zhang. She won the United States Women's Amateur at Fantastic Woodmont Country Club in the nation's capital, defeating Gabriella Ruffles on the 38th hole. Went 38. It's a 36-hole final. She's committed to go to Stanford. I don't know how long she's going to spend at Palo Alto, but the number one ranked junior becomes the number one women's amateur with her victory at the USAM. And Bob, you know I'm a golf geek. They're up in Oregon. They're abandoned dunes. The United States men's amateur is this week. And again, both of those fields on the U.S. women's amateur and the U.S. men's amateur were chosen this year. You were granted a spot rather than getting the opportunity to qualify. So it's been a unique situation for a lot of AMs out there who wanted to try and qualify but couldn't and didn't get invited based on the criteria that the USGA set forward. They went low in the qualifying out of Bandon Dunes, but it should be a great venue for match play once they get into that.
Well, U.S. Amateur, one of the events I truly look forward to each and every year. And to make one point clear, anything that I said about the Association of Gambling and the PGA Tour, strictly my opinion. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm getting word from the man upstairs or anything.
The hammer.
No, it's just me thinking this.
Bob, I hear you, but I think we're there, and I think the tour is almost there to where they're going to have to kind of, yeah, we're doing it, and you know we're involved with DraftKings, and DraftKings is involved with us, so we'll keep talking about it. I'll keep putting my teams together, and hopefully making $26 each week. Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.